Welcome to the Women Who Saved History, a podcast celebrating the Nevada women who preserved our state's history. We are telling the stories of the women who dedicated their lives to preserving the history of the Silver State. The fruits of their labor formed the foundation of many of our historical institutions. We are excited to celebrate them and their accomplishments with our first podcast series. Historical collections, buildings, archives, and methods of archiving exist and will continue to carry stories of Nevada into the future because of their work. Acknowledging these women has long been overdue. Produced by Women of Diversity Productions, Inc., a nonprofit organization focused upon enhancing the lives of women and therefore of society by giving visibility to women and creating a woman-appreciated future. We're going to just have a free-ranging discussion. Really, as the inaugural event for this podcast, I wanted us to take a moment to drink in these amazing women who have been responsible for so much good work in this community. I have to my right, artist, activist, amazing human being, Denise Duarte, if we can welcome her again. And then a woman who needs very little introduction, the Director of Oral History and Research at UNLV, Clay T. D. White. And also we have with us, also from UNLV's Library and Special Collections, extraordinary person and quite fun, I might add, Sue Kim Chung. So, yes, please, can we go back to the beginning, the founding of WOD and its mission? What is it that really was the impetus for Marlene in creating WOD?
Marlene Adrian founded Women of Diversity Productions. It was initially formed in 1992 with two other women, and it was specifically created to publish an academic journal. In addition to other things, they were ahead of their time, really. But the journal that they initially wanted to produce, which they did and still is in existence today, but we don't produce it anymore, is called Women in Sport and Physical Activity Journal. And it's the official journal of the Program for the Advancement of Girls and Women in Sport and Physical Activity, and is currently housed at the Center for Women's Health and Wellness at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. In 1992, they formed Women of Diversity because women academics were having a difficult time getting published when their top, it wasn't their, you know, their critiques would come back, it wasn't their methodology was good, all those appropriate things were there, but the topic they were told was not relevant. And what was claimed to be not relevant was that the topic was about women and girls in sports. Mm-hmm. And it was very difficult in that time frame to get published. No one was really accepting studies on women. And we do know that there are differences and important. What is really amazing is Marlene was so ahead of her time. She was president from the beginning, and she was president for over 30 years before she passed away in 2022. But even then, she was very concerned about diversity and inclusion. When they formed a nonprofit in 1994, they even included the phrase to promote networking and educational information in third world countries. She specifically states in many places where she wanted to include articles that were not originating out of the United States. In fact, she even co-founded a journal in Brazil that was also under Women of Diversity. So that's how it began. But they always planned to include feminist issues, lectures, events, and it grew into video documentaries. But before that, they published books by women. And the remarkable thing is Marlene would allow the organization to evolve over time to meet the needs of the women of the time. Mm. So it started with the journal. Then it went to publishing books by women. When book publishing was not something that was as easily attained as it is now. Then they went into video documentaries with full-length video documentaries, one called Hurricane Florence, about Florence McClure, one of the local activists who started the Rape Crisis Center and moved the Women's Correctional Institution here to Las Vegas, among many other things that she worked on. Judy Bailey was another full-length documentary. And we also did a lot of different events and things like the First Lady's First event as part of the Nevada Sesquicentennial. That actually became a year-long traveling exhibit and a book to celebrate the Nevada Sesquicentennial. In 2005, for the Las Vegas Centennial, we did a very large event at what was then the Las Vegas Art Museum that included videos, the Wall of Women with 256 women, who were first. And the reason why she did that, I remember she went to a meeting on the Las Vegas Centennial, and they were going to celebrate all these men and one woman. The one woman was Helen Stewart.
Wow.
And when she brought up, what about the women? Didn't they contribute to Las Vegas? And they said, well, we have Helen Stewart.
Wow.
So she came home, and she was very, let's just say, passionate about wanting to show more women's contributions to our community. In addition to that, we also produced the first survey and report of the Gaming Gender Equality Index for 2017 and 2018. It was an international study. It was the first of its kind. And before that, you know, some of the videos that we produced were, you know, promoting women artists, women actresses, women, for instance, Sojourner Truth by Kim Russell. We also did events. Kim Russell was very impactful. Remembering the Freedoms was an event that was put on every year that Kim Russell was in charge of. And other videos like Sarah Winnemucca and Remembering Nevada Women, just to name a few of the things that has been done. We currently have found over 680 videotapes of interviews of women and women's events that we are now going to be, over the next 2 years, sorting through and deciding what needs to be digitized. And everything will, of course, will be housed at UNLV Special Collections. So.
Wow. Beautiful. I think I want to ask you about Marlene Adrian's vision for WOD, and what do you think Marlene would say about the importance of this podcast in this time?
I think, again, you know, she believed in the evolving. The podcast is such an important method of communication in our contemporary society, so she would value that. Mm-hmm. I think she would really, well, she knew about the project because it had already been approved before she died. Mm-hmm. To Kim's idea of the podcast. She was very much for it, recognizing women in history, recognizing their contributions and the importance of history was very, very much a part of her passion. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you have to know what you have done and who did it and recognize them. And that also gives role models to young women and girls. And that was so important to her.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. That brings me to you, Clayty. We have the honor, of course, of including you as not only a host for many of these podcasts, but you're also one of the subjects as an archivist and a major contributor to keeping history in Nevada. So I want to ask you, in a time in which we find ourselves in a sort of purge, really, of histories, we have people who are government officials, governors even, trying to rewrite history, placing marginalized people further to the margins. What is the importance of archiving in a time such as this?
It is so important. I can't stress it enough. So this takes me back to thinking about that time when it was against the law for people who look like me to read. So, and now you're going to ban a book? To me, that is just simply ridiculous. Yes, I should have the right to read what I want to read. it's okay if you don't want to read it, but to ban it and to ban books like I Know Why a Caged Bird Sings. So I just think we have gone too far. It is amazing the number of books we have banned in places like Florida and Texas and all kinds of other places. Nevada Humanities had a program a couple of years ago where they had people read from banned books. Yes. That was the whole evening. Mm-hmm. Several of us selected a book and we read from that book. Such a phenomenal event. But I just don't think any book should be banned. And I can think of some books that, maybe The Art of the Deal. You know, there are some books that would probably be okay to ban, but not. I am just kidding. So, I think that if it is not my passion, it's okay.
Yes.
I don't have to read it. If it is your passion and the topic is not even something that I agree with, it's okay, because we're all so different. We're all as powerful as each other, but we're all so different.
I love it. So really engaging in work that has been banned or deemed threatening in some way to the zeitgeist is an act of repair and love. So keeping those things, keeping history intact.
Yes. History is just so important. Mm-hmm. We need that. We need to know history. Most of us don't know enough history. When I talk to young people in schools about the town today, they have no idea. I'm talking about Black history, but they don't know any history. So it is just so important that we find a way to learn history, whether that is through a book, a podcast, TikTok, no matter what it is. If you're going to learn some history, learn some history.
Love it. They're also talking about banning TikTok, but that's for another conversation.
Yes.
So is it this sort of importance of history, Sue Kim, that drove you to the idea of the podcast? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I guess I would start with, I was doing my initial research for my dissertation, which I wrote on the subject of Jean Weir and the Nevada Historical Society and how she was a founding member and how she was a driving force for the Historical Society for 46 years, almost 50 years. And I started to think about other women that I knew were important in my own work in special collections and archives. There was a wonderful woman named Anna Dean Kepper. For about 10 years, she collected the history of Las Vegas at a time when it was sort of a very new as a concept to collect historical documents and photographs. And so she did a lot of that. She did some initial oral history projects. And so I thought about her. And then I had always heard about Anna Parks, this fascinating lady. She was one of the first women undertakers in Las Vegas, Palm Mortuary. But in her spare time, she collected all kinds of objects and rocks and all kinds of things from about Southern Nevada. And her collection of things became the nucleus of the Clark County Museum. So I thought, oh, those are, you know, three interesting ladies. And then I thought of a wonderful lady named Effie Mona Mack. And she was the first woman in Nevada to get a PhD. She studied, I think, at Berkeley, but she studied the history of Nevada for her dissertation topic back in the 1920s or the 1930s. And she wrote one of the very first Nevada history textbooks. So there's another woman. And then so I started just kind of like going, oh, well, what about this woman? Oh, and what about this woman? And I suddenly thinking this is kind of a trend that we have a number of women who actually, and then my dear friend Liz Warren and the wonderful Jean Ford, who I did not have the honor of knowing, and all these women who contributed all kinds of little steps in preserving history, be it preserving the old Mormon fort, be it preserving oral histories, be it preserving a collection of photographs from the Squires family, all these different steps to preserving history. And so I thought, that's really cool that they're all women. And I just wanted people to know, like, look at all these women who've saved history in this state. And there have been a lot of men who have written the history of Nevada. And there's been a lot of books, kind of seminal textbooks on the history of Nevada. But they wouldn't have been able to write those books without the work of women like Jean Weir and Anna Dean Kepper. So I wanted people to know that if it wasn't for these women, the history of Nevada could not have been written.
Oh, that's beautiful. Beautiful. So there are about 19 women.
Yes, we just added our 19th woman.
And
20th. Oh, 20th. Yes. Sorry, Lynn Zook. She's here today. And we're going to say a few more words about her in a little bit. So we're excited. And sometimes we're finding other women as we go along. But we've got 20.
Ah, beautiful. So you are saving history, even as we are producing this podcast mm-hmm. about the women
and
who saved history.
Saving the history of women of diversity, too. Special yes. collections and archives, we have the archives of women of diversity. So.
Oh, beautiful. I think some of those superhero kind of trading cards are in order. Mm-hmm. You know, as I'm listening to the story of just the women who have done such deep work of preserving archive, it's hard work, but it's also work that's not often valorized. There's no romance to it. We don't see the cape, right? And these women have gone unremarked upon, unseen in so many respects. So I'm wondering, even as we do the correction and repair that relating history can do, how do we relate and so widely disseminate this information about these women that they can no longer be ignored? I think this is a question for all of us. How can we make the stories of these women, the work, the hard work, something that we celebrate not only periodically and in niche spaces, but in textbooks, in our classrooms? How do we do that?
So we actually have to write them into history. Mm-hmm. We have to write them into the curriculum of Clark County Schools, of the history classes at UNLV and CSN and Nevada State University. We have to start doing that.
Yes.
And because college professors have more freedom, I think that's a great place where that can start happening in a real way.
Yes.
And as we collect this material now, you have resources so that you can write papers.
Mm-hmm. How do we make this sexy?
Well, I think the podcast helps mm-hmm. because it's bringing attention. Mm-hmm. It's celebrating these women. It's going to be disseminated widely. It'll be living online mm-hmm. on the internet. Mm-hmm. It's not going away. And that's a good start. But it's just the first step.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There are many more steps after that. So we have to encourage.
And you know, our libraries today have makerspaces.
Yes.
Not just university mm-hmm. libraries, mm-hmm. but the libraries in the community. We now have makerspaces. Mm-hmm. Students can do podcasts. Mm-hmm. They can do documentaries. So it's going to be available for all of that.
Yes, I love that. Mm-hmm. And so the tools are there.
Yes.
To create other archivists. So giving that instruction and then demonstrating how women have done that before could lead to other young women mm-hmm. catching this fever, catching this bug. With that being said, can you take a moment for me, Denise, and talk a little bit about WOD and how you and Marlene went about assembling the board that leads to this kind of work?
Yeah, Marlene, she always had an advisory board as well as a board. And she understood that women in different times of their life have different availabilities and you know, you progress through life, and sometimes you can be on the board and sometimes you can't. You have to step back and just be there when you're needed and contribute in that way. So she was very good at always having both of those options available. And sometimes people start with the advisory board as a means to be introduced to the organization. Mm-hmm. And then when positions become available, they can move into a board position. And sometimes the other way around. To keep women from all walks of life on the board was very important to both of us, and still is to me. Different voices from different perspectives are essential mm-hmm. for what we do, to make sure that we capture the women who saved history from all walks of life. And I'm very proud of the list that we have so far. It's not complete, obviously, but we have 20 fine women from many different walks of life throughout the state. It's just not here in Southern Nevada. And again, this is the beginning, a tip of the iceberg. And the board is the same way. So what we look for and I'm particularly looking for is young women who have a passion about helping to create their future, a woman-appreciated future. And maybe they have talents that we don't have on stage. Maybe they do. They want to follow in the footsteps, maybe of Clay T or Sue Kam or you, Erica. But we have a place for women who have that passion and want to learn about how to participate in a nonprofit that's willing to evolve to fit the needs of the women of the future. And they can make it their own. And I think that's one thing that we offer is we are small enough, we're nimble enough that we can evolve. In fact, we have a history of evolving. Mm-hmm. We embrace that. And I think that sets us apart. So we're always looking, I'm always looking for women who just want to be introduced to this. And maybe they don't even know what skills or talents they have, but I know they have them because we all have skills and talents and we can be utilize them here at Women of Diversity. So there are many very notable people on our board. You know, Marlene was very good at reaching out and we love them. And there are some people that perhaps will be notable and in the future. And it's a wonderful opportunity for women to come and grow and find their own voice with us.
I love that. Come in with what you have.
Yes.
Hone it, grow it, contribute. And also just become something that you could not have imagined without the company of these women, perhaps. Something unseen.
Because I must say, this board is remarkable. We have a remarkable collection of women. And we all support one another, we celebrate each other and their achievements. And that's what it's really about. And, you know, I'm just thrilled with this particular project because it really touches on all those things that are core to who we are.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any board members in the audience that you'd like to introduce us to?
Yes, we actually have several board members. Mm-hmm. Would the existing board members please stand up? We have Christian Kaliani, Irma Varal. And Sam was in the back room. Sam Dingus. And anyone else? Okay. I want to point out. Yes, I did. I said Irma Varal.
Yes. We got you.
And we have Irma.
Irma. Thank you
for Irma. And we have A.J. Huth, which is on our advisory board, was greeting people. And Brissa Ariana. So are you in here, Brissa? Yes. She's going to be coming on our board, hopefully, next month. And I also want to point out one of the longtime helpers, volunteers, some participants with Women of Diversity, and we would not be where we are today without Sammy Seegers over here on the video camera.
Thank you, Sammy.
And we've had really wonderful luck. We have some of our board members include that I haven't mentioned. I probably should mention that just because they're not here, but they are very important. We have Shelley Berkeley, Jan Jones Blackhurst, Rosita Lee, and the rest of us are all here. Our advisory board is Joanne Bongiorno, Don Gibbons, Brett Levner from UNLV Film Department, Carolyn McClure, and Laura Martin. See Laura. Thank you, Laura. Right here on advisory board member. So thanks to all of them and their contributions and their feedback. Beautiful. It all matters. Voice matters.
Beautiful. And I believe, Sue Kim, do we have one of our subjects from the podcast here?
She's our most recent addition to our list. She makes us 20. She makes us a whole 20. Lynn Zook, she's right here in the front.
Lynn, so, do you mind standing?
Thank you. I'm going to, when I highlight some of the women on our list, I'm going to talk a little bit more about Lynn as one of the people who stands out to me.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well, let's jump right in.
Okay.
Out of the 20 subjects that we will be discussing the work and the life of, and Lynn being among them. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the 19, the stories that stick out for you?
And so they range from, of course, going back, you know, some of them were born in the late 19th century and way into the 21st century. So of course, Jean Weir being the person I've kind of started my interest in these women who saved history. She was born in 1870s. But I wanted to mention something that struck me about her, which made me think of why I wanted to do this series. Because I originally thought, should I write a paper about these women who saved history? Should we do a documentary? And then it just came to me the thought of like giving them their own little bit of attention through a podcast. So in 1908, Jean Weir was up in Reno. She was a professor of history at the University of Nevada, and she was the secretary for the Historical Society. By all intents and purposes, she did the lion's share of the work. She was also unpaid. Mm-hmm. She collected materials. She answered reference questions. She tried to give structure to the organization before there was even a building. But in 1904 was when it was founded. But in 1908, she took a train to Goldfield, and then she took another train to Las Vegas, which at that time, of course, had passenger service, which we were a tiny town. You know, we'd just been founded in 1905. And she did all this important work in July of collecting the history of the state. And she, you know, in a carriage, you know, on horseback, in situations where it was just so incredibly hot, and you can imagine no air conditioning at that time. She wrote a diary about this, and flies, millions thick. But one of the things she collected, in addition to Nevada newspapers, which are in use today, and which historians all over the state use these newspapers for writing historical narratives about the state, which would not be possible without this work that she did, this backbreaking work she did on her vacation from the University of Nevada as a professor. But she acquired the papers of Senator William Stewart, who was the first senator from Nevada after we won statehood. And hot, all this backbreaking work, and she was so grateful to have acquired these papers. And in the online Nevada Encyclopedia, which is an online, there was an entry for William Stewart, the senator, but there's no entry for Jean Weir. And there's biographies of Senator Stewart, but there was nothing to sort of, and people who would write about Senator Stewart never knew that they had the honor to have those papers was because Jean Weir did this backbreaking work in 1908 on her summer vacation from the University of Nevada. Anyway, so she's one of my people that stands out.
Unpaid, yes.
Unpaid work.
She's definitely one of my people that stands out. Anna Parks, I've mentioned her a little bit ago, and her work collecting the material that became the Clark County Museum. And she went to mortuary school, I think, in the 1930s. And she went off to mortuary school and came back to find out her husband was shacking up with another woman. And anyway, then she, which we will have a wonderful episode from Amber Colbert at Clark County Museum. It's a wonderful episode. It'll be our second episode. But she's definitely somebody but who was just steadfast in her desire to collect this material and collect these rocks. And her family still lives here today. Her descendants of Anna Parks still live here today. And then there was a young woman who grew up in Las Vegas during a classic era, during the 50s and 60s, and who really loved the town that she grew up in. And then flash forward many years later, and she is a grown up, and she decides she wants to, you know, there's lots of people telling the story of Las Vegas, and a lot of them were not born here and do not know the town on a kind of a personal level. You tell the story from the perspective of the Strip and the perspective of the entertainers and people that maybe didn't live here in town, and a lot of people that have written the story don't. Well, Lynn wanted to tell this story from the perspective of somebody who had grown up here and who had known some of these people and wanted to tell the story of Las Vegas as a community. Mm-hmm. So she set out on this quest to document and do oral histories and video oral histories of, I think, over 100 residents of our town. And some of them are no longer with us. And some of them were like pioneering residents of Las Vegas, or maybe just one generation removed from the pioneering generation. And so she's captured their voices and their faces on these wonderful videos and that are on her Classic Las Vegas as we knew it, on her website. And also she's donated all the raw files to Special Collections so future people can access this material. And again, like I said, capturing these people who are no longer with us, but also from a perspective of people who were community members and not just the big celebrities that everybody hears about when they hear about Las Vegas. It's not just the Rat Pack. It's mm-hmm. it's the people who knew the Rat Pack mm-hmm. and who played behind the Rat Pack. Mm-hmm. So she's one of my people that stands out.
Oh, wow. Beautiful. That's a lot of work.
So, yes, it was a lot of work. So Lynn will be recording her episode soon, and you'll be able to listen to that in the future. And then we also have people like Anna Dean Kepper, who, again, I mentioned her earlier, and she's certainly one of the people that stands out. And, of course, my dear friend Clay T. White is going to be one of the interviewees, and she's going to be one of the people that stands out. We do also have interesting people from Northern Nevada, and of course, Jean Weir was from Northern Nevada. We have Mary Gibson, who is the Nuwu Knowledge Center. She is from the Western Shoshone tribe, and she preserved and archived the documentation of the Dan sisters, a lawsuit against the federal government about the Western Shoshone lands, and it's at UNR Special Collections, and her own work as an archivist and up at the Nuwu Knowledge Center. So she'll be one of our interviews as well.
Oh, so. Beautiful, beautiful. So there's a nice collection of identities that are presented through this podcast as well. And that's one of the things I really appreciate, and I'm excited about getting this cross-section of generations and ethnicities and experiences all tied together by this impetus to keep history from different quadrants, from different perspectives, but all focused on what makes this state what it is. With that being said, and I know Sue Kim's going to ask you all of these questions, but could you give us a little taste of your journey towards being one of the premier archivists of the state?
My journey. Mm-hmm. So quickly, I'm one of those people who went back to school later in life. Won't tell you how late. And at the time, the history department at UNLV decided that it was time for someone in Las Vegas to learn how to do oral histories. And at the time, I was not the only non-traditional student. There were about eight of us. And all of us volunteered to take all of the workshops and seminars that they offered on how to collect oral histories. And when we had finished all of that, we decided to do a project. And because we were all women who had volunteered, none of the men in the department, none of the male students, none of the male staff, all women. So we decided to conduct a project called Women in Gaming and Entertainment. And we started deciding who was going to do what. And one person said, I'm doing dances and showgirls. And another said, owners and managers. And another woman said, cocktail waitresses. And then we had a person who wanted to do the transcribing. And I said, what am I going to do? I want to do something not transcribing, but actually using the skill we've learned. And people in the room said, there's a Black community here. And I said, where is it? And nobody knew. Nobody in the room knew where the Black community was located. But I was going to a beauty shop. And the next Saturday morning, I said, where's the Black community? And they said, that woman getting into the chair next is the person you want to know. So my first interview was with that woman's mother, Hazel Gay.
Wow.
Her husband, Jimmy Gay, had had a mini stroke and could no longer talk. And he paced the floor the entire time because he wanted the story told from his voice and his memories, but he couldn't talk. So he would give her notes every once in a while. It was a really interesting interview. So that started collecting the history of Las Vegas. So it started with that community. But since that time, we have interviewed people in the Latinx community, Asian American Pacific Islander, Jewish community, and then other geographical areas like the John S. Park area. So we've had the privilege of starting an oral history research center at UNLV 20 years ago, 2003, and adding to those early interviews, just trying to add all kinds of other voices, just a variety of voices. And so it has been an amazing journey.
Ah, oh, beautiful.
Yes, so I get to talk about it.
Well, you're all such beautiful storytellers. I mean, just listening to Sue Kim, you could just see also those of us who are on the podcast airwaves, you can't see the glow. When Sue Kim, you're talking about, you know, all of these figures and your admiration, it just shines. And, you know, Clay T, your storytelling abilities are unmatched. And, you know, again, the glow, the sense of pride. And, you know, Denise, as you recount how WOD was founded through Marlene's great and beautiful efforts, the glow is very real. What is it as women who are not only keeping but making history? What is the drive to do so? What is it about the power of telling these stories that keeps you engaged, keeps you going, keeps you finding other ways to tell these stories? What's the power in it?
I'll just start. There's a passion, and that passion drives you. So no matter who the topic is, and we don't just collect the history of renowned people. We collect the history of maids and dancers and school teachers, everyday people that we call them, workers. We collect their stories because people have memories that are so powerful. And we want those powerful memories in our archive. Because you want to know the history of the 1950s, let's say. So you need voices from every segment to tell portions of that history. So it's not just the mayor of the city from that aspect, but you want to know, what was it like to work in a casino? What was it like to teach in a classroom? What was it like to be in the West Side School? So we want every segment of Nevada history. So it becomes passion.
Beautiful.
I would say, because I'm somebody who works in the field of gathering and preserving history, and it's something, so I sort of identify with many of these ladies. In addition to, there's other wonderful ladies that have worked in the field of historic preservation, preserving buildings and landscapes, et cetera, as well. But I kind of identify with them, and I just want to see them get credit for what they do, because it's so easily, that kind of work can get erased. And so I just wanted them to get credit for all the work that they have done to make it possible for people to view the history of our state. So that's probably what drives me. I want them to get credit for all this work that is often marginalized, because people who write the history get the credit, but the people who save the history don't always get the credit.
Oh, wow. Yes. Beautiful.
And for me, I think it's because I've been a lifelong feminist. And, you know, I like to say that feminism is almost so core to me. It's almost my religion. My life, I've seen nothing but injustice and people not being recognized. And I always want to fix it. I can't fix it. I can't fix everything, but I can do what I can do. And this is something I can do. And I see myself more in a supportive role here because, you know, I'm not a historian. But I'm passionate about getting these women recognized and allowing young women to know that women made a difference. Like when Marlene went to that meeting and came home, it's not that she didn't appreciate Helen Stewart. She just knew there was a lot of other women that, you know, helped build this city and make this city what it is. And without our continued contributions from all walks of life, it's so important. And if we're going to respect people, if we're going to achieve equality, and we must embrace equity, all these things are essential, but awareness comes first. And without awareness, nothing will happen. So to me, this is like tier one, step one. Let's give these women their due. Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yes. So responsibility to those women who've done the work.
Yes.
And a responsibility for the ones who will do the work.
Exactly.
That's correct.
Beautiful. Can we give you all a hand? And just thank you. Thank you.
And we wanted to invite you all to pass your cards up and answer questions. How can we make learning history meaningful and fun so that our children want to learn it, want to keep it?
So I think there are a lot of ways to make it fun. We have games now that are based on history. We can create more of that. Mm-hmm. It means that we have to learn history ourselves. Mm. We have all kinds of quizzes. There are quizzes in the schools, and CCSD has quizzes that students can participate in. So there is already a beginning. And now we have to make sure that women are included in those games and those quizzes that have been written and that are being used in classrooms. So maybe women of diversity should design something so that we can use this podcast as the basis, the foundation of something that we would like to see.
And picking up on that, we already have, we know the sources. The resource sources, where, you know, where they're located, all this information, you know, that would be just the next step.
Exactly.
We've already recorded some of the episodes, and I get to listen to these episodes. And one thing that, Clay T., you keep bringing up in this, oh, that would make a great film. That would make a great book. That would be, you know, these women's stories are so fascinating.
Yes.
You know, Jean Weir, I mean, I could just see her, you know, riding this horse in July in Southern Nevada to go collect some newspapers. You know, it's like, these are great. So there's ways, and I think the podcast is one step, but we could take it further.
Yes.
We could take it further and make it more enjoyable in the media that appeals to young people.
Yes.
I will say, as somebody who does instruction with college students, undergraduates, the way to get students interested in history is to engage them with primary sources. So the actual building blocks of history, the raw materials, the original diaries, the letters, the photographs. You engage them with that and you have them think about it, and they're not given a book where everything's written for them.
Yes.
They have to look at a document and say, well, what did that person say? How do you think they were feeling when they wrote that letter? Or how do you think the person who received that letter must have felt after they received it? Or what do you think is going on in this photograph? Mm-hmm. So that's how you engage them. You don't just talk at them. You engage them with the actual source materials. I think that can make it fun for them.
Oh, beautiful. Good. So something that's tangible, that can travel perhaps into the classrooms. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, yes. Great. And I need to raise more money.
Yes.
And money is the challenge. When we look at the women's lives, the women that we've talked about already, the women that we've either interviewed or had other people talk about, that was the challenge.
Mm.
Money. And for women of diversity, that has been one of the challenges as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for all nonprofits, really.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
To do the work.
To find the money to tell the stories.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that we can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that might take us to a question from one of our audience members. They ask, did these women seek, or the word used here is shun, male allies? I can't imagine that they would have shunned male allies at all. However, could you all speak to what kind of allyship, partnership, alignment from the other half?
So you tell a story about Jean Weir when she's going across the state, and sometimes she has to have this man with her to help protect her.
Yes, she did have, in some cases, when she had to go into mining camps and look for these newspapers and things like that, early 20th century. And it was a little, she was pretty fearless, but being around all all the vulgarity and the swearing. And so she did have a wonderful man from Good Springs, Frank Williams. He was and he did help her. But she also had other men who told her, you're crazy to go collecting these newspapers for the state. Why, you're not getting paid for this. You know, why are you doing this? But she also had allies up in the north in the legislature, and they helped her get whatever sort of small funding for the historical sites. So she did have people who did work with her. And so we haven't gotten to all the stories yet, but I definitely think they did have allies that helped them.
And I don't think they shunned anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I think they used all the resources possible to yes. make it happen.
Yes, yes. As we all must,
yes.
and as we all do together mm-hmm. in this organization. And we want to invite you, please, to not only listen to the podcast, but also seek out more information about Women of Diversity. As Denise shared with you all, we're always looking for women of power, women of community, women of talent, focus, and drive to join us in this work. Any other last words before we, I could keep you going, but Sam and that daggone light, she's just telling me it's time to go.
So even if you know a woman who did not save history, doesn't qualify for a podcast, just know that the Oral History Research Center interview those women. We interview people. And so if you know a woman, because we're talking about women today, if you know a woman who was the first school teacher in Searchlight or whatever, refer those people to us. And we can capture their story. Mm-hmm. Those stories are saved and archived at UNLV.
And don't those stories just tell what life is really like? Mm,
definitely.
Because not everyone's notable, but everyone's story is valuable.
Everybody so. Has a story.
Yeah.
And no matter who you are, and you have a story that matters, mm-hmm. you can tell me what it was like to go grocery shopping in 1962. And what that was like and where you had to go and what going to church was like and who the ministers were, mm. just everyday facts that you forget. It's part of history.
Yes. And what it was like to go grocery shopping in March of 2020.
So that's
like,
right.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Yes. That's yes. correct. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So everyone has a story.
Yes.
Everyone has something to contribute to the furtherance of one another's humanity. Thank yes. you all for doing that work.
Thank you, Erica.
We especially thank Sue Kim Chung, Denise R. Duarte, Erica Vital Lazar, and Clay T. White for their significant contributions of their time, energy, and expertise to make this podcast series possible. This podcast is brought to you by Women of Diversity Productions, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit organization focused upon enhancing the lives of women and therefore of society by giving visibility to women and creating a woman-appreciated future. This program is funded in part with support from Nevada Humanities and the National Endowment for the Humanities. In addition, we thank Caesars Entertainment for their sponsorship of this podcast series. Without their support, this podcast would not be possible. Do you want more stories of women who have shaped our society? You can help by visiting our website, womenofdiversity.org, to learn more and by donating today. Your donation may be tax deductible and will help recognize the roles and lives of Nevada women today and in the future. Without you, none of this would be possible. Check in on the last Sunday of the month for our next podcast episode.